K-Mud Podcast presents.
Good morning and welcome to Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes and I'll be with you until 10 a.m. And I opened this morning with Logan Alexis from the Nakota Nation, who gave us a round dance song. All right. Well, so many crazy things have been happening in the news, but as long as, you know, we have a really incompetent, no compassion president, it just gets crazier and crazier. Yeah, billions and billions to build an arch when there's people living in the streets, people that are hungry, people that are sick and dying, and nope, we can't help them, but we're going to build an arch and we're going to build a ballroom. And what's happening with the redistricting in the southern states, it's like, I feel like I'm back in the 50s again when I was a child watching this on TV. And here I am in my 70s, and I'm seeing it all over again. But there are good things that happen. And this is from Brandy Morin. She says, they planted their feet on sacred ground, and they won. Yes, it was Paisla defended by the Lakota youth, a company driven out, a blueprint for what comes next. She says, I'm writing this from the Amazon, and I'm going to share some of that in a few minutes. Embedded with indigenous communities standing on the edge of their own kind of catastrophe, watching their forests eyed for extraction, their rivers under threat, their sacred spaces circled by same ancient hunger for profit that has never once been satisfied. The greed that drives these machines doesn't sleep, and it doesn't stop. Not here, not in the Black Hills, not anywhere on Turtle Island. But today I pause to breathe because something remarkable just happened in South Dakota, and it deserves to be held up to the light. Paisla, the heart of everything that is, the sacred high elevation meadow in the Black Hills that the Lakota have utilized for over 2,000 years for prayer, ceremony, and the cultural practices that keep the universe in balance, is safe. For now, and the people who saved it weren't politicians or courts, though those played their part. It was the youth, it was the elders, it was the prayers of thousands who refused to look away. On May 7th of 2026, Pete Lynn and Sons Incorporated, the Rapid City-based mining company that had been drilling for graphite near Paisla after receiving a controversial U.S. Forest Service permit in February, sent a letter to Mystic District Ranger Jim Grubbles, formally withdrawing their plan of operations for the Rockford Mineral Exploration Project. Signed by CEO Brian Tidman, the letter states the company, quote, does not intend to apply for another CE or file another plan of operations for exploratory drilling at this site. Yeah, you want to hear that again? They're not coming back. And I don't know if it's because it's in Rapid City. I'm just saying this because that's really close to, you know, where the, you know, where they're drilling. Whereas, you know, like in Oaks Flat, it's some foreign mining company. Most of these uranium, they're, you know, companies that aren't anywhere, not headquartered anywhere near where they're destroying the earth. And so this one is. So maybe they were just a little worried about that. But me being the skeptic that I am, I'm thinking, okay, so they're not going to do it. Or are they going to sell the rights to some company far away? I don't know. But at least I know one thing. They bailed. To continue, this victory arrived didn't arrive quietly or easily. It was pulled from the earth by an extraordinary week of consecrated, courageous action. Oglala Lakota youth locked their bodies to drilling equipment. Land defenders occupied two active drill pads for a week, planting their spirits in the same soil their ancestors had prayed on since before this country existed. Indian Collective, the Black Hills Clean Water Alliance, Earthworks, and the Oglala Lakota Nation Youth Council organized with fierce focus, speed. Nine tribal governments, in a historic show of sovereignty unity, filed a federal lawsuit against the U.S. Forest Service over its approval of the project. And on May 5th, a federal district court granted a temporary restraining order halting the operations. Prayer, presence, law, and community. All of it at once. All of it working. Quote, today's successful protection of Paisla, which is the result of courageous land defense by the community, strategic legal action, and collective prayer, marks a great victory for the people and Mother Earth, said Wissapan Garriott, president of the Indian Collective, in a press release issued on May 8th. Quote, we must build on this win to continue the people's work to secure a bright future for generations to come in the Black Hills and beyond. Lilas Jarding, executive director of the Black Hills Clean Water Alliance, put it in plain terms, quote, community engagement in action forced an extractive company off our shared land. Today it is a reminder that not only do we all have a duty to protect the Black Hills from harmful drilling and mining projects, but that we have the ability to win. and Valereja Big Eagle, director of the HESAPA initiatives at Indian Collective, said what so many felt in their bones. Quote, from the very beginning of this battle, our ancestors were with us. We felt prayers coming to Pesla from all over Turtle Island. When we ground together in truth and what is right, led by our spiritual leaders and the next generation of warriors, we are unstoppable. This is just the beginning. This is what it looks like when Indigenous people say no, when they mean it, when they back it with their bodies and with prayers and their absolute refusal to yield. This is what should happen every time. But let's not let this moment of joy blind us to what surrounds it. Pesla did not exist in a vacuum. It exists inside of Black Hills that is being systematically staked, claimed, and circled. As I reported earlier this month, she says, as of January 2025, there were over 13,000 active mining claims covering roughly 271,000 acres in the Black Hills, about 20% of the entire region. Gold, graphite, uranium, lithium near Craven Canyon. A Canadian company is proposing exploratory drilling for uranium near Rock Art, estimated to be 7,000 years old. The Trump administration has reportedly selected a related uranium project in the same area for fast-track permitting. Near Spearfish Canyon, new gold exploration proposals drew nearly 2,000 public comments last summer. Quote, drill, baby, drill isn't just a slogan. It's a directive with a map, and Indigenous sacred land is on it. The victory at Pesla is rare. Let's be honest about that. For every story with an ending like this one, there are dozens we never hear. Communities quietly dispossessed, sacred sites quietly sacrificed, the machine grinding forward while the world looks away. I see it from where I'm sitting, here in the Amazon, where the communities around me face pressures that would be searingly familiar to the Lakota youth who chain themselves to drilling equipment in the Black Hills. Different land, same story, same engine running it all. This engine keeps running because the world keeps letting it, because the political will to stop, to truly stop, has never matched the scale of what's being lost. Humanity has taken and taken and taken, told itself it's necessary, it's progress, it's survival, when it is the opposite of survival. The question isn't whether there is enough left to protect. The question is whether enough people in power will listen before there isn't. Every sacred meadow, every intact river, every uncontaminated watershed that remains is what the living world is still made of. Indigenous peoples have always known this. They have been the last line of defense for all of us, over and over again, for generations. But what happened to Pesla last week tells me something I need to hold on to from here in the Amazon, far from home. It's not too late to turn back. The Lakota youth who locked themselves to those drills, who built prayer altars in the shadow of a broken federal promise, who held that sacred meadow for days while the world watched. They showed the world what it looks like to stand firm when everything is on the line and win. This is a gift to every land defender from the Black Hills to the Amazon, to every place on earth where someone is standing between the sacred and the machine. Pesla is still standing. Let that light the way.
Hey, hi.
That was the Porcupine Singers from the Lakota Nation singing us an encouragement song. And I know that, yeah, we do need encouragement, that's for sure. But I know this community, and I know if anything happens in this community I'm living in, there are people ready to stand up. And that's the strength that we each and every one of us have. Sometimes we don't know it, sometimes we don't feel it, but it is there. Well, yeah, Trump did it again down there at the border. You may have heard the story, but I'm definitely want to share this with you because President Donald Trump's expansion of a wall along the southern border with Mexico has damaged a rare Native American archaeological site in the Arizona desert, area residents said, as the administration moves to rapidly build hundreds of miles of additional barriers in a $46.5 billion project. You know, I keep wondering where all this money's coming from. I mean, are we in debt into the trillions and trillions of dollars, and this redheaded idiot just, you know, they're letting him do it? Okay, I'm sorry. I'll just continue. Yeah, a $46.5 billion project. The aggressive expansion project, funded by the one big, beautiful bill, is erecting 3 miles of wall a week, introducing barriers in parts of Texas that did not previously have them, as well as a second wall in much of California, Arizona, and New Mexico. And the construction is not abiding by environmental laws and other protections, alarming advocates, national park staff, and Native Americans. In Arizona, construction crews ran heavy machinery through and destroyed a roughly 60 to 70-foot swath of an intaglio, a more than 200-foot-long ground etching that looks like a fish and is thought to be at least 1,000 years old, said Richard Martinek, a retired archaeologist who now volunteers his time surveying the area. Satellite imagery from Friday shows a disturbance crossing the Intaglio area. And after the publication of this article, Customs and Border Protection, which is overseeing the wall's construction, confirmed the intaglio was damaged. Quote, on April 23rd of 2026, a border wall contractor inadvertently disturbed a cultural site known as Las Playas Intaligo, located west of Ajo, Arizona's along the Arizona border. John Mendel, a CPB spokesperson, said. The CPB commissioner, Rodney Scott, is discussing next steps with tribal leadership. Quote, the remaining portion of the site has been secured and will be protected in place. Lorraine Marquez Eiler, an elder of the Odam indigenous people, said the site held special significance for Native Americans. Quote, if someone came to Washington and started destroying all the different sites that people in the United States revere, it's the same thing to us. Yeah, that's what they're doing. That they're destroying everything in Washington, tearing down the West, you know. I mean, it's crazy. And the reflecting pool, gonna paint it some other color, spending billions to redo it. Okay, quote, those things were made by our ancestors, and it's hitting home. For me, it's an emotional subject, she added. The intaglio is inside Cabeza Prieta National Wildlife Refuge, where a government contractor overseen by the CPB has been working on the barrier project for weeks. And the Interior Department administers the refuge. An Interior Department staffer who spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to talk to the media confirmed that the intaglio had been damaged last week. The primary goal of the wall, quote, is to gain operational control of the border. The CPB website states, quote, these border barriers are intended to provide persistent impedance and denial to illegal cross-border activity. The Department of Homeland Security has issued waivers so that the border wall construction does not have to follow laws that protect the environment or indigenous sites, which normally require extensive study and planning to limit damages. And most of the refugees are already separated from Mexico by a single wall, with the administration building a second parallel wall in a bid to increase security. Illegal crossings have fallen to historic lows under Trump, leading some conservation groups to question whether additional barriers are necessary. and Modernek found that the intaglio in archaeological surveys of the area with his wife, also an archaeologist, in 2002. And while there are other intaglios near the Colorado River, this etching is unique for southwestern Arizona. Quote, there are very few intaglios in this area, so by losing part of it, it's a big deal, Sandra Martinek said. Native Americans made the intaglio by scraping the blackened stones on the ground to lay bare the white soil beneath, Richard Martinek said. It was probably used for ceremonies, although that and the intaglio's exact age are hard to know. Richard Martinek said he had visited the site about 2 weeks ago and saw stakes running through it and extending in both directions, appearing to mark the future path of the border wall. There were no tire tracks leading to the stakes, indicating that whoever placed them chose not to drive through the area. Quote, they knew something special was there, he said. And at the time, construction seemed distant, he said, so he did not alert anyone to try to stop it. He had heard that government officials were actively discussing with locals how to mitigate any damage. Native American residents, including the nearby Tohono O'odham Nation, have expressed concerns about other significant sites that lie in the path of proposed border wall construction. Those include the Akito Bakito Springs, which is also home to endangered turtle and fish species, in the Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument, as well as a Native American gravesite. Leaders of the Tohono O'odham Nation did not respond to requests for comment about the damaged intaglio. Quote, somebody is responsible for this, and we all knew who that is, and he should be held accountable for it, Marquez Ehler said, referring to Trump. Quote, he's getting away with whatever he wants to do. He's doing it, and no one is stopping him. And a statement from Representative G. Halva, who is a representative of that area. And yes, Congressman Adelita S. Grijalva released the following statement after the Department of Homeland Security contractor damaged a 1,000-year-old cultural site, the Las Playas Intaglio, during border wall construction on the Tohono O'odham Nation. This is not the first instance a culture site on the Tohono O'odham Nation has been damaged. And she says, quote, bulldozing a 1,000-year-old sacred site is not an accident. It is the predictable result of rushing forward with a second wasteful border wall. It is a blatant act of disrespect and an unacceptable violation of tribal sovereignty, traditions, and the ancestry of the O'odham people, said Representative Jihalva. Quote, this is not just temporary damage to land. It is irreparable destruction of a sacred place tied to the O'odham people's history, identity, and spiritual practices passed down across generations. Unfortunately, this is not the first time a sacred site has been desecrated by border and wall construction, and it will not be the last until the federal government takes illegal obligation to tribal consultation and following environmental laws seriously. The Tohono O'odham Nation has been clear. These walls divide their communities, desecrate sacred land, and do nothing to make us safer. DHS must immediately halt construction, fully investigate this incident, and be held accountable for the damage already done, instead of wasting $46 billion on a harmful and useless second border wall. This administration should be investing in real solutions that strengthen our communities. And I'm going to share some very, very old songs from the Tohono O'odham Nation. You know, these could have been even some of the ones that were sung in ceremonies using that land that they just destroyed.
The Song of the Black Mountain. There was a black mountain in the ocean. There was an unseen cloud coming toward that mountain. It went into the black mountain and made it wet.
Oh, hey, mama, hey, mama, hey, mama.
song of the green rainbow. A green rainbow was moving toward me. So here I was dancing under the rainbow and making the rain wet the whole earth.
Songs, and you know, when you look for, you know, for the old songs, it won't say, you know, Toho no o Odam nations or music. It'll say Papago, because that's what the Spanish called them, you know, equivalent of people with a dirty skin or something to that effect. And in the 1970s, they said they've had it, and they changed it to what their original name was, what they call themselves, just like most people say, oh yeah, the Navajo. The Navajo don't call themselves that. They call themselves Diné. Well, I wanted to share this with you because tribal advocates, conservation groups, faith leaders, and community organizations are calling on Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs to halt plans that would convert thousands of acres of state trust land into a massive dumping ground for mine waste tied to the proposed Resolution Copper Project. In a coordinated push, opponents urged the governor to prevent the auction and development of land in Dripping Springs Valley, identified as the site for a tailing storage facility that would hold nearly 1.4 billion tons of mining waste. And the facility will support the proposed copper mine east of Phoenix, a project that would ultimately destroy Oak Flat, a sacred site to Native American communities. Quote, Governor Hobbs has the power to stop Arizona from being used as a dumping ground for toxic mine waste, and we need her to use it before it's too late. The governor can make sure our state isn't complicit in Oak Flat's destruction, said Russ McSpadden, Southwest conservation advocate at the Center for Biological Diversity. Quote, these state lands are supposed to serve the public and future generations, not expose people and wild places to long-term risk. Arizonans deserve better. And according to the U.S. Forest Service final environmental impact statement, the proposed tailings facility, known as Skunk Camp, would span more than 9,200 acres, or roughly 14 square miles, making it one of the largest in the world. The site would store toxic mining byproducts containing heavy metals such as lead and arsenic, held behind a dam rising nearly 500 feet. Just picture that, folks. Seriously, picture that. A dam 500 feet and all that waste behind it. And what if the dam were to break? What if there was an earthquake? I mean, that's just insane. To continue, opponents also argue the plan conflicts with Arizona's legal obligations for managing state trust lands. The Arizona State Land Development has determined the facility would reduce surrounding land values, raising concerns about whether the project serves the best interests of trusted beneficiaries, including public schools. Quote, Arizonans would bear the environmental risks, water depletion, and long-term liabilities of this project, while foreign investors reap the profits, the group wrote in a letter to Hobbs. Quote, your administration has the authority to protect Arizona families and preserve the integrity of state trust lands by rejecting this dangerous mine tailings facility proposal. Quote, Arizona state trust lands are held in trust to generate long-term values for schools and other beneficiaries, and that responsibility requires careful, forward-looking stewardship, said Sandy Bauer, director of the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter. Quote, approving a massive toxic tailings facility that would devalue surrounding lands and create lasting environmental liabilities is incompatible with the state land department's fiduciary duty. State leaders have both the authority and the obligation to ensure these lands are managed in a way that protects their value and avoids shifting long-term risks onto future generations, including the school children who are trust beneficiaries. The controversy is closely tied to Oak Flat, a piece of deep cultural and spiritual significance that is listed as on the National Register of Historic Places as a traditional cultural property. Known as Chichili Bildaga Gotil, the area remains central to the religious practices and identity of Western Apache and other tribal nations. Quote, don't mind what can't be remade. Protect Oak Flat, said Selena Lamas of the Ohodom Nation, a member of the Proxy Javier Native American Club, class of 2028. Quote, some places are more than resources. They hold history, culture, and life that can't be replaced once they're gone. When land like this is destroyed, it isn't just nature that's lost, but a part of identity and legacy that future generations will never get back. Resolution Copper plans to use a block cave mining to extract ore deep underground, a method expected to cause the surface of Oak Flat to collapse into a crater nearly 2 miles wide and more than 1,000 feet deep. The operation would also require significant groundwater pumping, enough, critics say, to supply the city of Tempe for decades, raising additional concerns about regional water availability. If approved, the project would transport billions of tons of waste through pipelines to the Skunk campsite, transforming thousands of acres of state trust land into a long-term storage facility for toxic tailings, an outcome opponents say would have lasting consequences for communities, ecosystems, and future generations. So that's the latest update on Oak Flat. Now they're going to try and get the state, you know, to do something, and they can. And it's like they said before, it's not over till it's over, and it is not over. So this is from Brandy Morn, as I was reading her my opening piece about Pesla. She was saying she was in the Amazon, and this is her report from the Amazon. She entitles it, How I Fell in Love with the Amazon and Why That Love is Breaking My Heart. The most beautiful place on earth is being sold to the highest bidder. And the area she talks about and where she is, I went there in the early 80s, maybe it was 83, 84, with my daughter. And we were in this area. And I think it was, 1983. And my daughter went back again. It's in Ecuador. And what she says is, I didn't know I was going to fall in love. I knew I was going to work. I've been to the Ecuadorian Amazon many times now, writing features for Cultural Survival and Ricochet Media, and also filming a documentary with the support of the incredible organization Rewild, produced by the brilliant team at Multi TV in Ecuador. Two separate assignments woven into one extraordinary immersion. I had known about what was happening there for a long time. The mining, the militarization, the violation of indigenous sovereignty. It just took me a while to get there. These trips are expensive, deeply, impossibly expensive when you're doing independent indigenous journalism and every dollar is a prayer. But I finally had the chance and I went. I'm writing this from the Amazon right now, and everything I'm about to tell you is why I keep coming back. I knew I was going to step into something magical when I first met the jungle in November of 2024. I just didn't know it was going to reach into my chest, wrap itself around something essential, and refuse to let go forever. And when I was reading this, I thought, oh my gosh, I mean, I was there, what, 40 years ago? It was, you know, more than 40 years ago now, 43 years ago. I can't imagine, you know, things that have happened there. And she still sees it. It is really beautiful. So that gives me hope, encouragement to continue. Yes, and she refused to let go forever. The sounds hit you first, before you've even fully registered where you are. The Amazon is already inside you. Thousands of creatures singing at once. Insects and birds and amphibians and frogs. I just have to interject here because I could not go to sleep last night. You know, I opened the windows. I wanted that air in. And there were just frogs. And I mean, they just would not stop. And they were so loud, I had to go get earplugs. And then my husband said, I just think we got to close the window. And I said to him, Do those frogs get sore throats? I mean, they just kept going and going. But to continue. But it was wonderful, you know, at sunrise this morning and hearing all the birds. But to continue. Layered into something so alive, so ancient, so complete that no sympathy hall, no recording, no human could ever replicate it. It is an original orchestra, and it will make you feel, maybe for the first time, what it means to be a small and grateful part of something enormous. Then the green, oh my God, the green, hundreds of shades of it, I swear to you, hundreds, and each one wakes something up inside you that you didn't know was asleep. You become alive in the Amazon. You remember what alive actually feels like. The hummingbirds dart past you like little planes, their wings moving so impossibly fast. They're just a blur, a sound, a tiny roaring miracle. The butterflies land where they please, unbothered and stunning. The frogs, electric and jewel bright, call out from places you can't see. Snakes move through the undergrowth, the living water. Scorpions tuck themselves into the dark corners of the world, quiet and ancient and dangerous. Everywhere you look, and I mean everywhere, something breathtaking is happening. I kept catching my breath. I cried more than once. Not sad crying, the kind of crying that comes when beauty breaks you open. I'm from Treaty 6 territory in Alberta. The prairies, the Rocky Mountains are 3 hours from my front door, and they are magnificent. I will never take them for granted. But the Amazon is another planet entirely, another dimension. The rivers, the wildlife, the density of life pressing in on every side. I felt like I had been let in on the universe's most sacred secret. In Bolivia, yes, Bolivia has an Amazon, and my God, I witnessed caimans by the thousands stretched out on riverbanks in the sun, capybaras wandering freely, pink river dolphins surfacing in water the color of amber, boa constrictors, howler monkeys, spider monkeys moving through the canopy like liquid. I was in literal heaven. I pitched myself every single time I'm there. The Amazon is the gem of our world, irreplaceable, irreductible, holy. And the people who call it home, are as alive and diverse as the forest itself. Their languages, their traditions, their songs, still here, still bright, still proud. The Shuar people, my friends, my teachers, were the only indigenous nation never conquered by the Spanish. They were renowned for the practice of tisantza, the shrinking of enemies' heads, and they were so feared, so sovereign, that the colonizers could not break them. Centuries later, they are still warriors. My beloved friend Numli is Shuar, from a community called Ma Cuentes in the Cordillera del Condor. He is beautiful and kind and fierce in a way that is quiet and certain, in a way a river is certain. I've walked hours into the jungle with him. I've stood at their sacred waterfalls, the places where the Shuar believe they touch God, the places where Our Tutam lives, and I have breathed air so clean, have felt like forgiveness. I have said prayers there, and I have cried there. The first time we met, Numli got stung by a scorpion. He was okay, and now we laugh about things until tears roll down our faces. That laugh, that ridiculous, joyful, loud, whimsy laugh we share. It is one of our favorite sounds on this earth. But we have also cried in each other's arms many times over what is coming, over what is already here. Those tears have a different weight entirely, because here is where I have to tell you the part that will break your heart too. The Amazon, this irreplaceable, breathing, singing, prayer, living place, is under siege. The jaguar's territory being swallowed. The sacred rivers threatened with the same orange toxic death that other communities downstream from extraction have already been handed. Multinational companies, governments hungry for copper and oil and profit, closing in, pouncing for money, for markets, for a few years of extraction that will poison what took millennia to build. The Shuar of Macaquaints are fighting a copper mining project that would tear open 260 square kilometers of pristine jungle. They were never properly consulted. The International Labor Organization confirmed it in 2024. The company divided their communities, weaponized economic depression against itself, and called it progress. The Ecuadorian government sends in the military, and now Ecuador's president, Daniel Noboa, wants to take it further, auctioning off Amazon territories to oil companies, offering up more than 2.3 million hectares of some of the most biodiverse forest on the planet as blocks for exploitation. Without consent or consultation, simply deciding that the blood of the earth is worth more than the people whose ancestors have lived on it since time immemorial. The Waharani people are facing this head on, and the Waharani leader, Nemonte Nepkimo, has declared they will never give their consent. Never. This isn't abstract. This is not far away. It's happening right now to people I love in a place that I believe with everything in me is one of God's greatest gifts to this earth. And so I want to speak directly to her now, to the Amazon herself. I see you. I have walked inside you, breathed you in, wept in your arms. I have heard your thousands of voices singing at once, and I have felt down to my bones that you are alive in a way that most of us have forgotten how to be. You are not a resource. You are not a block on a map. You are not a negotiation. You are sacred. You are ancient. You are irreplaceable. And they are coming for you. I am not going to look away. I'm going to keep coming back. I'm going to keep telling your story and the story of the people who love you and who are willing to give their lives to keep you breathing. My beloved friend Numli has told me so with his hand on his heart, and I believe him because I have stood at your waterfalls and felt what he feels. I understand now why you are worth everything. You stole my heart. I gave it willingly, and I am asking everyone who hears these words to give you a place of theirs too. You deserve to survive. You deserve to be defended. You deserve to be loved by people who have never even seen you, because whether you know it or not, you are keeping them alive. Fall in love with her, then fight for her like she is yours, because she is. She belongs to all of us, and we are all failing her. A song from the Shuar people. Thank you. Again, that was from the Shakar Nation in Ecuador, a great CD, Musica de Ecuador. And Ecuador is the most indigenous country in the world, you know, per capita. And yes, the CD just has all these incredible songs from a lot of the indigenous nations there. Yeah, I'm going to close out with Red Earth. I'll be back next week.
Bosses!
Babylon ran race, many people come, so many people pray. Oh, I haven't felt
to cheer. Now once in a this a lifetime, got to keep on moving, keep on pushing through the jet stream. Don't go down yet, push up from the ground and open up your heart to Red Osiris sound. When life got you down, don't wear the frown, cause brothers, sisters pulling so you turn your life around. The time to begin starts from within, so get past the bullshit, break up from the sin.
This has been a K-Mite podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.